Hello and welcome to ABW Radio Live in the afternoon. It's your illustrious pirate back in the hot seat after a 2 week absence. Yeah, 2 week absence. I'm sure none of you have missed me. I haven't missed me, so it's all good. I am joined by Mr. John Welsh. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon.
And all the way from Merkerland, it's Donald Trump's favourite fan ever. Not. All right, Chase.
Let's make Donald Trump again, everybody. Let's
Yeah,
make Donald Trump again. And good morning to you, as it's a nice 10:06 a.m. here
oh, beautiful. See,
on the Eastern Seaboard.
I was thinking to myself, which is always dangerous, of course, but if Trump was to get into power, there is one good thing that would come of it. You would probably move over here.
Or
So,
to Canada to be with OG and Dom.
oh, don't go to Canada. No, that country is, since Dom has gone there, it's gone to shit. I'm telling you. OG
Well,
told me.
it's a bit cold there, but it's a bit rainy where you are. So I guess it's just pick your poison at that point.
Yeah, I can't deny it is a bit rainy here. Anyway, that's ABW Radio World Report out the way. Let's talk about some Arsenal, shall we? Right, let's do what we always do then. John, I'll start with you. Initial thoughts, overall, pluses, minuses. Oh, cheer up, John. Come on.
Who'd have thought John would have been negative?
Throwing away a 2-0 lead is so annoying. Yeah, it started okay. The game was fairly open, which is a little bit scary because West Ham have been good this season. But getting the two goals, I thought, yeah, we're really exploiting the spaces they had in behind with the system they were playing. Thought, this is fine. Cruise in, getting it 2-0 at half time. I thought West Ham would probably change the system, which they did. And then we go and let in two stupid goals. Just poor, really, really poor defending. And then second half, come out, West Ham change the system. We're all over the place, don't know what's going on, and concede a third. And just, ugh, just terrible. Nice that we got the goal back to make it 3-3, I suppose, is one thing. But just, I'm not sure what the team were doing today. Like, the gap between sort of the front four and the midfield is huge all game. The defence was getting pulled all about all over the place. We made Andy Carroll look like, I don't know, fucking. It reminded me of when Drogba was at Chelsea, and the way he used to bully our defence. Then we were just like scared to go anywhere near him. Dimitri Payet, for as good as he is, and he's a great player, and I love him. He's great to watch and everything. But it made him look like fucking Zidane today. He was nutmegging people and just embarrassing players. It was just, ugh, it annoyed me. And in some of the substitutions as well, I'll have to double check who was on the sub bench. But was Joel Campbell on the bench today?
Don't
He was,
know.
I think, wasn't
I'll find out for you.
he? Yeah. Well, if Campbell was on the bench today, why is like Walcott coming on and instead of Campbell? I don't get that. And we all
Campbell
know.
was not on the bench today,
Oh, he
no.
wasn't. Okay, so he
No.
wasn't on. Right, I'll give you that one then. Why he wasn't on the bench, I don't know. But there we go. Yeah, just so frustrating being 2-0 up and going, okay, I didn't think, I wasn't going to be convinced even if we won today that we could get the league, but at least we'd be doing everything possible to give ourselves the best chance. And to throw away a 2-0 lead is just, ugh, awful.
Fair enough. I'm going to send someone around to take the scissors away. But while I do, Jace, what's your thoughts? Do you share John's disappointment? Can you sort of find more positives, or are you a little bit in the middle?
Well, I thought we would concede some goals today just because West Ham are a decent team with some really good quality in there with Payet, Kiate, and obviously Andy Carroll, as much as we can slag him off, does have a history of giving us problems with his height. And we all know that we can be a little lacking on defense and set pieces. So I had predicted 3-2 to us, actually. Knowing that we would probably give up some goals to him. So, yeah, it's just disappointing because I think we all knew what to expect, and they came out doing what we would expect, and we still, gave up a 2-goal lead. That's you're always going to be frustrated. You're always going to have to sort of dig down deep, and I'm glad that we did. And, you know, Koscielny seems to just get those sort of key goals at key times. And this could not, you know, I don't know what the tabulations are for, you know, winning the league this year or anything like that. But there are a lot of teams that are still very close to us that are back in, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth place that that could still catch us. So for us to be able to sort of pull that back and keep us, at least get us a point, was very important. And it seems to always be Koscielny. I know the last couple of years against Newcastle, you know, grabbing those goals to sort of keep us in things as well. Where we were at late in the season has always been important. Really disappointing that Theo scores a goal, you know, in the last game, and all credit to him, did a good job finishing and putting it away. What does Joel Campbell need to do to get in the team? And it's surprising because even 3 months ago, our good friend Mr. Welsh over there was Mr. Anti Campbell. And he's played himself into a position that one of his more staunch critics is now asking why he's not in the team. And I think that just goes to show you that Wenger still doesn't quite know what he has in the team right now. And we have, what, 8 games left? And we've had the injuries and everything, but like what you know, he's still trying to guess, and we've sort of got the midfield dynamic down a little bit better with Kokkinen, as I'm going to call it, sitting there is the two in front of the back four. But yeah, today it was just very disappointing. You know, people blame Gabriel for turning his back and not, you know, or turning on the second goal and not getting the full body in front of it. But if you look at that worldwide, every defender does that. Should they? No. But every single – I've seen John Terry do it. I've seen Gerard Piqué do it. I've seen Rafael – what is his name? Varane at Madrid do it. It's instinctual, and that's what you end up doing. I've done it as a defender at times, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. The other thing I want to you know, harp on is just the shit performance – by the referee today as well against both teams. There was just some god-awful calls, some god-awful no calls, and the fact that we were still – in the past, we haven't been able to overcome that. And I think in more recent times we have, but, you know, what is it, PGMOL or whatever it is, has got to do a much better job of training these referees and getting them to where they can actually decently call a match at the speed that it's being played, or we need to really look at how we do this.
We will touch on refereeing decisions in a short while, but I want to just go back, John, just to the lineup initially. A lot of people have asked about Petr Cech. I think from what we're being told, he was sort of 80%, but not quite 100%. And I know, like you've said previously, it does seem odd to put him on the bench if he's not 100%, but, you know, that's life. There's no point going over old ground. What about the rest of the lineup? I mean, were you happy? Unchanged, wasn't it? So were you overall happy with what we put out there?
Yeah, but I didn't see the point in changing it. We'd played well. We'd won the previous two games. And no, I thought Cech should have come back in. If he's good enough for the bench, he's good enough to start. As far as I'm concerned, it's one or the other. And that's not to knock Ospina. Ospina's done really well. Again, I'm not his biggest fan. But he's played well in all the games that he's been brought in for. He's made some good saves. He made some good saves today as well. But I just think, if you have your very best player available for a position, and Cech is, we all know how much better Cech is than Ospina, then I think you play him. But other than that, the lineup was, as it should have been. There was maybe a question mark over whether Giroud could have started the game, possibly. But I think Welbeck and Iwobi, Alexis, the partnership, sort of those three had sort of built up over the last two games, and Mesut pinging the balls for them, for those running players, there was no need to change it. So, yeah, I thought the lineup was fine, and you saw it was working okay, you know, for the first sort of 30-odd minutes. So that was all fine with me.
Fair enough. I was much the same, although we'll touch on the defence in a minute, but I still personally would rather see Per at the back. But, yeah, we'll come on to that. Jace, sort of go through the start of the game. I want to leave the Carroll thing aside in a minute because I want to tie that into something else. But let's just talk about the goals. It was all going rather well, in fairness. I mean, we actually started a little bit edgy, but we grew into the game. And then the first goal from Mesut Ozil, criticised for not getting enough goals, he popped up with a really well-taken goal, and we exploited that back three to get one up, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, and I think the fluidity that we had, the movement that we had, was really what caused that back three a lot of problems today. And they almost never seemed to be in a straight line, and they always had a guy sort of missing. And I think we did really, really well. I'd still like us to see, there were a couple of times on a few breaks where I would still like to see somebody make a back post run, and we just don't. We only send one into the box. But that's being quite nitpicky. But I do, you know, the first goal, to see just how calm Mesut is in situations with players around him, a keeper coming out to close him down, and just his ability to finish that almost, you know, pinpoint into the side netting for the first goal was great. And the second goal, it was one of those assists. I put it in the WhatsApp group after that. It was just a cheeky little assist, just a nice little flick that, from a young player like that, you usually see there's too much weight or not enough. But he hit that perfectly. Actually, I think he hit it with the outside part of his foot as well, sort of over the defense. And you know, really, really well taken. Two assists by Iwobi, though, as well. And I don't want to overhype the kid because he's got a long, long career in front of him. And I think we're very guilty of, as supporters, of getting in the way of that by overhyping somebody way, way too young, when they still have a lot of growth and development, not only in their bodies, like when 19, you're still growing, you're still figuring yourself out, but also just talent-wise. And I'm not going to crown him anything yet, but I'm very interested to see sort of the progression that he makes and has over the next, you know, 5 to 6 years. But I think movement-wise, the second goal backwards, working out the game, I really do think that we played some of our best football of the year as well. Our passing was a little crisper. You know, we had really good movement. Elneny has really come into this team and done very, very well and taken over more of the role that Cazorla plays for us, and just that calming influence. You know, get your head up, you know. You can see Coughlin was wanting to find Elneny, and when Ramsey's there, I think Coughlin looks for other options other than Ramsey at times. So it's good to have those two have such a dynamic together for playing so few games together. But I really think that you know, it was some of the best football we played. A couple of things early on in the defense that had me worried, but I thought even then we still were playing very well, and sort of throughout the pitch, whether it was, you know, in our defensive third or our offensive third. So it was very positive. And then I don't know, somebody flipped a switch and I don't know what happened.
John, pick up the slack from there. Jace sets it up quite nicely. I mean, I tweeted at the time, I said when we were 2-0 up, I thought we were playing well. We seemed to have, okay, granted, I think we took advantage of a West Ham formation that they clearly weren't comfortable playing, the 3-4-3. But we had a lot of the possession, you know, we didn't really have a lot of shots on goal to defend. 2-0 up, we were zipping the ball about. It seemed pretty comfortable. And then 2 or 3 minutes of just madness defensively. Is this, I mean, we've said for ages that we don't score enough goals, but should we be really focusing on this defence and an inability to defend, and more importantly, just shut a game down for 10 minutes? You know, it's not all right conceding one, that's the wrong thing to say. Concede one, but to then concede two in the space of 2 minutes, it's just mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it was strange because we had a warning earlier on in the game, the Lanzini goal, which was called for offside, that wasn't. And that was just simply a case of players not picking up their runners and late runners into the box. What Lanzini does is similar to what Ramsey had been doing when he was scoring goals for us, with those sort of late runs at the back post and getting any knockdowns or spills from the keeper. We had all day today, the gap between Coquelin and Elneny to then the front four players was just huge. Sanchez, who got a goal today, great goal, nice finish and everything. Other than that, I thought he was really bad. From the last previous two games, he played really well, but there was no tracking back, none of that energy that he normally shows. He wasn't covering the runs. For as much as we exploited West Ham's formation and the defensive issues they had with it, we looked like we didn't have a clue how to defend against it. Because the wing-backs, you know, you've got Antonio, who's playing a position he's never played before in his life. But Monreal didn't know whether he's supposed to go out to him or not. Bellerin didn't have a clue whether he's supposed to be marking Cresswell or Lanzini. They didn't know who they were picking up. And just Andy Carroll just completely bullied Koscielny, and in particular Gabriel. Mm-hmm. I know there's the whole red card thing and all that that I'm sure we'll come on to. But if a striker is causing you that much trouble, then and you're one of the centre-backs, grab one of your midfielders and say, look, we're really struggling here. Come back a little bit more. You know, whether it's Coquelin or Onelny or someone has to, you know, come in and help them out there if they're not dealing with it. And he was constantly pulling on to the fullbacks as well to win the headers. So Monreal or Bellerin has got to say to the centre-half saying, you know, I need some cover here, or a midfielder to come in and help me, because they're not going to win a header against him, you know. As you know, he's a good footballer. I don't think he's amazing, but a bloke of that size, you're just not going to win the ball in the air against. So you need to address that quickly. And it looked like no one had a clue how to do that. They just didn't know what to do. No one was crossing, closing down for crosses either. Like the second goal, the Cresswell cross. It just had so much time on the ball. And we've seen how good a, you know, like West Ham fans last season were rating that Cresswell and Jenkinson were the two best players in the team. And Cresswell, if it wasn't for Payet, probably would be up there as one of their best players this season again, because he's delivering the boxes into the boxes fantastic. And when you've got players like Antonio and Carroll attacking the ball, you know that's what they're going to try and do. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science. It's, if you're playing West Ham, don't give away free kicks on the edge of your box, because you know what Payet can do. And just don't let them have the ball wide, because they're going to whip it in for Andy Carroll to attack. And we just let them do that for some reason. Instead of being 2-0 up and go, right, we'll just slow things down for a bit, just control the game, just passing around. Even if you're just keeping it at the back, just playing it from defence to midfield for 5-10 minutes. It's boring to watch, but it's the sensible thing to do. Instead, we went, no, we'll just keep going, just throw bodies forward. And it's that sort of Hail Mary attitude that we've had in Champions League games and earlier in the season that's cost us in games, and it happened again today. It's so frustrating after the two previous games where we seem to work out those kinks and we seem to have that balance between defence and attack and the midfield was balanced. Today there was just there seemed to be no cohesion between that front four and then the rest of the team, and they just weren't working for each other. You know, for as much as we exploited their tactical sort of their shape, West Ham going forwards, we were exploiting it. But them coming at us, we just didn't know how to deal with it, and that required someone on the pitch, you know, to say, right, I need help, I'm struggling, or you know, Bellerin, you know, go and grab Sanchez, say, but you need to come back. Iwobi, for as good as you were, and he was great today, and when he went and played centre mid for like the last 20 minutes of the game, that's ridiculous. A kid of 19, you know, playing centre mid against monsters like Kiyate, you know, Monreal has to grab him at some point in the game and say, no, you've got to come back and help me more, because I'm getting roasted down this side and they're getting crosses in. So there just wasn't enough, I hate the leader term thing, just someone with a brain, basically, to say, you know, calm things down a bit.
It's not even leadership, is it? It's just organisation, isn't it? Yeah, I think the two are often confused, aren't they?
Yeah. Like, you know, Coquelin's done it at times in games. You know, Elneny probably, maybe he did it at Basel. I hadn't seen enough of him there. You know, it's the sort of thing, if Mertesacker's on the pitch, maybe he does say that, you know, or has a word with some of the players. But there's enough experience in the team that the players on the pitch should be able to recognise that. And, you know, and then if after the first one, then maybe, you know, Arsene gets a message on the pitch to the players and say, look, you need to, you know, solid up a bit. And the second goal came so quickly after the first one that the team just looked shell-shocked, and it was the worst possible time to concede as well, like right before half time.
I think that's the biggest frustration I have. Ironically, it's not that we concede, because you kind of expect that nowadays in truth, but more the fact that it was so close to half time. If you go in at 2-0 up, sure, West Ham changed their tactics and were a lot better second half, but if you go in 2-0 up, you've got a platform. And you refocus the minds and you stick sort of six behind the ball for the first 20 minutes of the second half. You kill the game. That's it. Done.
Manager a chance as well to say, Sanchez, you need to help Monreal out a little bit more, and they're getting into wide positions a bit more, but they just couldn't hold on, could they?
No. And as you said, as soon as they scored the one, you could almost feel that second coming. It was very inevitable.
But why can't Wenger say that during play?
I think he would, Jose, to be honest.
Chris has muted himself.
Chris, sorry, I let on the button. No, I was just going to say, I'm not digging at you in any way, Jason. Yeah. Please don't think I am, but I do get so tired of people saying, there's no direction from the bench, nobody says anything from the bench. How do you know? It is so frustrating when people say that. I think that John's right in this case. I think it has to come from the players on the pitch. Again, I obviously manage at a lot lower level, but you can say whatever you want from a sideline and you can get messages across. But the simple fact is, when you concede a goal like that, short of calling across the whole team as if it was a break for extra time and refocusing them, is very, very difficult to do that from the bench. But what I think does happen is that there is direction shouted on. I refuse to accept that people.
I'm not saying that there isn't, because you did see him up at times today and pointing and gesturing and everything. I'm just and we don't know if it was said or if it wasn't. But I feel like at some point, if your players aren't doing that, then it's either got to fall to Boold or to Wenger to make that call. Because sometimes in the moment, the players may not see that if it will be, instead of tucking in by 5 yards, maybe it goes 3 yards further wide, maybe those balls aren't as available down that left-hand side. So that Monreal just has – so it's those little things that, that you see. But I'm not saying he didn't do it. I'm not saying he did do it. We can't tell. We don't have the coach's cam. We can't. But at some point, if what you're saying is the players aren't doing it, then it should come from the manager. And then the manager should go in at halftime and say, why the hell aren't you communicating? That's the problem. And I don't personally, I have no facts to back this up. So I'm about to make a very Trumpian claim. Personally, I don't feel that is done enough either by any of our coaching staff, but that comes down from the leadership of Wenger down through the ranks.
Hmm. Yeah, that's as you say, that's an entirely different argument, and that's fair to point out. Let's just stick with you, Chase. Then obviously at 2-2, you think second half come out, refresh the minds, get ourselves focused, go again, and wouldn't you know it, within 7 minutes we're 3-2 down. Again, I will come back to the Carroll incidents. I haven't forgotten, but I want to get through the goals first. At 3-2, be honest with me, did you think this has gone to shit, that's it now? Or did you still have faith that we would be able to come back? Because, again, that third goal, to me, looked quite avoidable.
Yeah, it was very, very avoidable. And let me just say, any man who has that amount of hair and chooses to do those types of braids deserves to be bald.
It's unforgivable.
Moving on. I've gotten to the point now, and people can call me out and whatever. When we're down, I don't feel like we have the mental strength to come back. We might be able to pull a goal back, and I thought, there still might be one for us, but I don't have the faith because we haven't done it in years. I don't remember the last time we actually won a match from a losing position. I don't. And maybe we have, and I'll be more than happy for somebody to say, oh, it was 3 weeks ago and I just forgot. But the fact is this has become the norm for us, is playing really well, taking advantage of what the opposition gives us, and then giving it away. You guys make this way more interesting than it should be, and then all of a sudden we'll have to find a way to play better, instead of actually just putting the knife to their throat early on like we did. And so I didn't think we would. I honestly thought we would drop all the points and it would just be calamitous. And obviously, the banners would come out again, and all the banner boys would be beating their drums around the stadium, and But it was good. Like I said, it was great to see Koscielny get what I feel is a pretty crucial goal for a pretty crucial point for the rest of the season for us. But I didn't feel like we I didn't feel the way we had conceded. I didn't feel like we would be coming back.
Fair enough. And John, when we did come back into it, I mean, I tweeted at the time. You know, I don't really want to sort of go on about social media, but at 3-2 down, everybody is losing their proverbial minds, and it's all doom and gloom. And I still had faith because there's something in this team that I think they're almost out to prove that they have got some bottle. And I do get a bit tired of the, oh, they've got no bottle. You know, I get why people say it, but I just think it's a bit of a lazy argument. And they did show that they had a bit of fight, they had a bit of character. And I think with Koscielny, that goal, I think that's where I see him as a leader. I don't think he's a vocal leader, but I think he leads by example. So were you pleased with the way that we responded to going behind in a game we could easily have just lost and gone out of, you know, just completely folded in?
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to get the goal back. I'm not surprised that we got the goal back, the amount of forwards we then threw on the pitch, which was nice for a change, to be fair. Arsenal doesn't normally do that, you know. We went 4-4-2, and I think at one point we had
I think we just went 4-6.
Yeah, was it Iwobi and Ramsey was like the midfield at one point, which, you know, it's fine. We were chasing a game. We had to win, you know. It's what we had to do today. So I didn't have a problem with that. I thought that was quite cool. But is that Icardi scored? Oh, sweet. Sorry. sorry, people. Winter Milan scored. I got excited. But yeah, you've done me now. I've completely lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
I didn't think we'd go on to win necessarily because I understand you don't like the argument of the no bottle and everything else, but to be 2-0 up and then concede 3 goals without reply is fucking ridiculous. You can't at any point, you can't think to yourself, all right, we're gonna be 2-0 up in a game, concede 3 without reply, but yet we're still in with a shout for the title. You can't, title winning sides don't do things like that. You know, like Leicester have what? They lost 5-2 to us. I think other than that, have they conceded more than 2 goals in the game? Or like they lost 2-1 to us when they went down to 10 men. I think that was the last time we came back from a losing position, Jace. Yeah, I completely forgot it as well. It feels like years. So I know exactly what you mean. But it's good we got the goal and it was thrown in the box and there was an element of luck to it because it sort of scrambled about and Giroud got the little flick and then, you know, I think Iwobi was actually trying to take a first touch to get a shot off and he didn't control it and it fell to Koscielny and it was a good finish, great finish for a centre back and he was in the right place at the right time and that's cool. But the conceding the 3 goals before it just to me makes it almost irrelevant. You know, a point, great. We got a point against West Ham. I know they've done very well this season and they've got some good players, but this is a team we've expected to be challenging for the title and be pushing. And, you know, we've possibly, I know we got the point, so we're, what, 3 points behind that lot now, level on games. You know, that's not great to me. I know they've got some tough games and I'm not cheering either team. Hopefully they all get, I don't know, AIDS or something tomorrow in the Man United Spurs game because I don't want to cheer for either team. It's disgusting. But, it's Man City are now closer to us and we've got to play them. And now I'm looking more behind than I am above us, which is really disturbing when Spurs are above us because it's, you know, we always finish above Spurs. It's just got to happen. I feel sick. Sorry.
I think we will.
I completely lost my train of thought. Totally. As soon as Icardi scored a goal for Inter Milan.
Sorry. I'll be quiet. When they lose 2 in the last 10 minutes, which they inevitably will, I'll stay quiet. I just got asked in the chat actually why it's a good point when we were 2-0 up. Guys, at no point did I say it's a good point. I didn't say that. What I said is, I think it shows. If this Arsenal side go 3-2 down, lose 4-2, 5-2, then I think everyone's got a right to say, you know, there's no heart, there's no fight.
And what? Well, I did think when we went 3-2 down, I did think, oh God, this is, we're going to get like,
yeah,
concede number four or number five. And to be fair to West Ham, they had the ball in the back of the net five times today.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And what you say is completely valid. I'm not disputing that. You know, I'm not saying conceding three goals is remotely good enough for a side to win the title. It's not. That's a fact. You know, we've done it too many times. I think of Liverpool and what's the other game we conceded? Oh, I'm thinking of Anderlecht, actually. It's a long time ago. But there are too many examples. Newcastle, the 4-4. You know, this team are too fragile. Considering what we used to be used to of the sort of shutting down games era. But what I am saying is that you can't have it both ways, and I don't mean you guys, I mean people that have said such after the game, oh, well, there's no fight, there's no characters in this side. I would disagree with that, simply on the fact that, yeah, we could easily have gone under at 3-2. But we'll carry on, we'll carry on. Jason, let's address the big elephant-shaped braided twat in the room. Now, I'm going to caveat this before we go into this discussion about Sir Andrew Le Carroll. First of all, if England are going to select this guy to win the Euros, then I'm sure Italy, France and Spain and Germany are rolling around the floor pissing themselves if that's what England have got to take.
The defenders are terrified, to be perfectly honest, because no one will want to play against him.
John, come on. Chiellini, he'd have him for breakfast. Anyway... What I will say is that the defending, I'm not going to defend the defending, which again we'll touch on in a second, because that isn't defendable. However, Jace, would it be fair to say that Monsieur Carrel could have walked on at least three occasions and should have walked on the first occasion? Discuss.
Yeah, and I see exactly where the referee was coming from on the first decision. It's within, like, what was it, the first, like, 4 minutes of the match. Mm. Everybody slates referees for, you know, why don't you just let them play, like, give them a yellow and let them go on. Well, I do feel that if that foul was 20 minutes later, it's a straight red. At the same time, you shouldn't referee to time. You should referee to the rule book. And so, to me, the referee's a lose-lose situation because everybody wants to see 11v11. We always complain about why send somebody off so early and it makes it a blah, 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 blah. And if one of our players had done that, I think we would have said, why send them off? It was so early. Like, you know, just give them the yellow and keep the game level and let the two teams decide it. But at the same time, we had Ian Dark and some bozo on the color commentary over here, and they were like, oh, I don't know why he would get injured. Like, it didn't really look like there was that much in it. And I was like, did you not understand that he literally stopped Koscielny's foot with one leg and then kicked through it with the other while the other was still planted and keeping one? So his leg literally went like this at the ankle. That's going to hurt, and that's going to cause a lot of pain, and that's why he went off. And I was very surprised that he continued on. And I just thought that was the most boneheaded thing to do, was to speculate when you could clearly see it on the slow motion replay that they had. And it seems like, though, we get these types of decisions against us that don't go our way very often. And I'm thinking back to the Leicester game and the Danny Drinkwater tackle. You know, halfway up, you know, Ramsey's leg. But I really just feel like, you know, I can see why he didn't give the red. I can see why he would give a red. It's one of those things that I'm gonna do what no fan in the chat box wants me to do. I'm gonna live in the gray and just say it was what it was, and he stayed on. He did. We can complain about it being a red all day, but he stayed on. There were some fouls after that, though, that were just absolutely ridiculous. And Koscielny should have just pulled him back by the braid. That's what he should have done. Just yank his head back on one of those, because it was utterly ridiculous the way he was just allowed to sort of roam free after he had the yellow and just do what he wanted to and throw elbows and kick out at people. As cheap as it was, I was kind of glad to see Gabriel sort of kick out after him as well when he was down on the ground late in the game. That was pretty nice. But, yeah, It was so early. I don't like to see reds that early, but at the same time, you need to ref to the rule book and not the clock.
Agreed. I think a couple of things, and John, I'll get your thoughts on it as well. A couple of things to pick up on. I with you, Jace. I mean, yes, some people say it's too early. I don't care. If it's a foul and it's worthy of it. If that challenge was on me, I would have gone absolutely batshit crazy.
Well, you couldn't have because your ankle would have been in half.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But for a man who's had, you know, when Koscielny has obviously had his Achilles issue, I winced. Now, for me, it's the fact that he doesn't have one go, he has two goes. Mm-hmm. And the second one, there was no intent to play the ball there. The ball was long gone. It was malicious, and it was a vile challenge. Mm-hmm. And I cannot understand anyone that can defend saying it's not a red. What I alluded to then afterwards with regards to the other issues, this idea that you have to use your arms to jump, right? There's two trains of thoughts in that. Do you have to use your arms to propel yourself when you're going up? Absolutely. Not disputing that. Do you have to go up in the air like that? That's utter bullshit. I'm sorry. Utter bullshit. I'm sick to death of English pundits, in particular, Danny Mills, who criticise the likes of Robert Pires and then decides to then have a go at his own argument saying Aguero should go down too easily. What a cock. But people like that who say, oh, it's just, you know, it's the English game, it's rough and tumble. I'm sorry, when you go up like that and you move your elbow backwards when the ball is in front of you, it's a foul and you have no intention. And the commentators on BT Sports say that he was that Carroll was essentially defending his position, you know, that he's in the air, that he's protecting himself. That's utter crap. What are you defending? Do you think somebody's going to deliberately head you in the back of the head? It's two players going up for a ball. If they clash heads, fair enough, you know. If two players
that,
are going
with
up
with that man bun, he's protected anyway in the back of the head.
It's just utterly ridiculous. You know, I say I totally appreciate you use your arms for leverage. You go up with your arms up. I get that, but you don't go up and then move your arm backwards. And Carroll has got away with it for so many years, and it's a foul. And if he did that in the Champions League, not that he ever will because he's nowhere near fucking good enough to play in the Champions League, but if he ever did, he'd be sent off every single week. So, and I know John's champing at the bit here, but I mean, John, what did you make of the whole thing? I mean, firstly, would you have sent him off for the first challenge?
Sorry, I love how animated you get about these
things. Ah, it just annoys me, mate. I like beautiful football, not ugly twats.
No, the one on Koscielny, yeah, I thought it was a red card and he got lucky. There's not a lot you can really say about it. It was a foul, it should have been a red. It wasn't given. Muting myself. It's annoying. Sometimes you get them for you, sometimes you don't. That happens to us. There's been games this season where our players should have had red cards and they weren't given. They weren't even given a yellow. So it's irritating because obviously he went on and he got the three goals. But, you know, refs make mistakes. They're human beings. They don't get the benefit of replay. They don't get to see it in slow-mo. They get one look at it in real time from an angle that you don't actually see it from because you see it from the angle of the camera, not from the angle of the referee seeing it. You don't see it from their level on the pitch. It's totally different. As for the elbow thing, I don't actually think it's a foul. Yes, I think you use your elbows to jump. You do use that for leverage. I only played shitty Sunday league. I played Saturday, which was slightly better, only because you got to kick off a bit later and didn't have to get up so early. Played that for a little while. I used to play centre-back, and whenever I'd jump up in the air, I'd swing my elbows as far and as hard and as fast as I could, because otherwise you get absolutely clattered. And the strikers used to do the same. And you'd know that as you go out for a challenge. I know people say, oh, you shouldn't do that. Watch Serie A, Bundesliga, La Liga. Happens in every league. Always does, always will do. The bigger the player, he's more likely to do it. The taller and more physical the players, they seem to get away with it more. Just because they are bigger and it looks slightly more natural, unless you're Fellaini because he's just so weird and gangly. But I know people are going to complain about the red card that should have happened. Yeah, fair enough. But if you're getting bullied by a centre-back, go and grab Coquelin or Elneny and say, that massive cunt pikey bastard over there with a stupid haircut, can you go and two-foot him and put him up in the fucking air so he'll leave us alone for 5 minutes? Just go and put one on him. What's the matter with you? It's a derby. It's going to be more physical. Those things happen. If the ref's not helping you out, go and help yourself out. Make him terrified to come near you. And as it's not the game now and blah, blah, blah. Well, sometimes you just got to toughen up and get on with it. Sorry, it really bores me, this. Oh, well, oh, he pushed me a little bit. You know, that it's... It happens. All fans of all clubs do it. We're all very blinkered, and it's all everything's against us. The referee always gives us shit decisions. We never get anything our way because you're only looking at it from your point of view. Well, it happens exactly the same. There's been plenty of games where we've kicked the shit out of teams, and that team's got nothing in their favour in decisions wise. And then in that game, we're going, oh well, it's a physical game. It's all fine. But then when someone does it to us, it's, well, you can't do that. No, that's terrible. That's against the rules. No. You can't be pushing people around. But you can't have it both ways. Just get on with it. If the ref's not officiating the game properly, yeah, that's an issue. But if someone's being really physical and you're not getting a decision, go and fucking put one on him. Just lump him. Whatever you got to do. Get a sly elbow in. Stamp. You know, get the studs down the back of the ankles when the ref's not looking. Sometimes you have to do that in a game. It's part of football. It's not nice. You know, it's like the diving thing. I don't like that. That fucking winds me up and I hate it. It really annoys me. But sometimes you just have to do that today, in football. And it's just the way it is. So the elbow for me, just, you know, get on with it. Gabriel, you know, he's ugly enough anyway. It's not going to make him any uglier. You know, just, you know, like Jace said, the little kick out. I did like it. I thought it was stupid. There's a smart way to kick someone. Now, Gabriel could have easily got sent off for that because that is, you know, stupid, violent conduct with no intent to go for the ball. You know,
he was just rolling, John. He was just rolling.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, make it more of an accident whilst I, you know, hit you as hard as I can straight in your knee, or, oh, that's that player who's got a dodgy ankle. Just make sure we get that exact ankle when I, oh, sorry, ref, I'm a little bit slow. You know, Paul Scholes it. I'm a bit slow. I couldn't get to the challenge in time. You use your brain. You know, we used to, one of our favourite midfielders our club's ever had, we absolutely lauded, Patrick Vieira. He battered people all day. He was awful. Some of the fouls he committed were terrible. He could have ended careers. Could you imagine him in this team now?
Coquelin had a couple of those today as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Flamini, everyone loves him. Why do they love him? Because he runs into people and absolutely mullers them.
I'm not, by the way, in the interest of fairness, and I will sort of even this up slightly, I will say that, as Jay said, the referee I thought was poor for both sides today. I thought there were plenty of challenges. And I agree with you, John. Sometimes we are too nice. I totally agree with you on that. And maybe I'm seeing it obviously you're seeing it still for the playing Sunday League. I'm seeing it for the managing Sunday League now. I guess if one of my players gets someone like that, I'm going nuts. But I take your point.
It's horrible as a manager, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
Oh, don't get wrong. When I was playing, I would have loved the referee to go, whoa, that's a dangerous play. Because he would have made my job a lot easier instead of every single Sunday getting off the pitch going, fuck me, I'm in agony.
I think the biggest issue I have, I guess, and I suppose it's, you know, it's obvious we're going to say this. The issue I have is that essentially the player who should not have been on the pitch essentially got them points. And now it's the benefit of hindsight because he could have been sent off and Payet could have scored three, or, you know,
well, the Lanzini goal could have been counted.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
You know, and the other one that they put in the net where, you know, like that was a Carroll were, that was a foul, but that could have easily been, that was a bit 50-50 for me. They were both had handfuls of each other's shirt, and the defender got the benefit in that case. You know?
Went down as he had to. Yeah. I will just say one other thing before we move away from the red card business, because we've had a good debate there. Owen Hargreaves, for those of you not in the UK, we get the pleasure of Owen Hargreaves. I say pleasure for a man.
Like Owen Hargreaves.
I'm sure he's a lovely guy with dodgy hamstrings and ankles. But he came out with the immortal phrase, that another one of my particular favourites. When Dimitri Payet went in on, was it Coquelin? I don't know, the one who left a stunt on the top. You know, it's a mistimed challenge. It was nothing malicious, but it was a foul. Owen Hargreaves came out with that immortal one. Well, he's not a dirty player. Oh, well, that's all right then. I'm not a murderer, by the way. So when I go and murder somebody at some point in my life, which I'm not planning to do, I should stress, for legal reasons. But if I do murder somebody, I'm just going to say, well, I'm not really that kind of guy. So that'll be fine. It'll stand up in court and I'll be happy to walk free. So that one does bug me. And of course, Glenn Hoddle coming out with the immortal phrase with Andy Carroll with that challenge. Well, he's just frustrated. Oh, that's all right then. That's fine. No worries. In that case, you crack on. And
what are
munch.
You frustrated about 5 minutes into the match?
Exactly. Frustration
his
is one
hair.
Thing.
His hair. That's what it was. He saw a mirror.
And
then
course,
realized he was a C-U-N-T, and then he was like, oh, I got to take this out on somebody.
And surely being part of being a professional footballer means that you should have the intelligence to be able to control your frustration. God bless Andy Carroll. I hope you fall off a big cliff. Anyway, moving on. Don't shake your head, Welsh. let's just talk about the defence side of things. Now, I had a tweet. I can't remember who it's from actually, but I think I retweeted it. I'll see if I can find it. But somebody retweeted something about the Koscielny Gabriel partnership, and it was essentially saying that Gabriel has been kind of responsible for a number of goals we've conceded this season. Here it is. Gabriel's been involved in more opposition goals this season than Per has since he joined. He's fast, though, so it's okay. Now, Jace, I'll start with you on this one. I'm not at all slagging off Gabriel here because, he could come good. There's enough there to suggest to me that he's a very good footballer. I don't think we'd have signed him else. But for me, he's not ready. He's not ready to be relied on every week. It's not just the turn in the back thing. It's the way he reads the game. It's the way he's rash. It's the fact that he does make some very good tackles, but they're often, like Koscielny used to be, they're often because he's made a mistake and has to make up for them. My concern is, I'm not saying Mertesacker's the answer, but that partnership with Koscielny is still the best thing. That is still the best partnership for me. They complement each other well. And no, I'm not bashing everything, Rudrud, everything. I'm making a point that, in my opinion, Gabriel is not ready to be relied on as a first-team player. Do you see it that way? Do you think that he is? I mean, do you see it differently than I see it?
I actually see it somewhat similarly. This partnership of Gab and Koz right now actually reminds me, I want to say it was 2012, maybe 2011, with Vermaelen and Koscielny.
Exactly.
When Koscielny was somewhat new to the league, he had an established, he was, you know, Vermaelen was the captain, he had been here. We all thought he was this great defender, but then all of a sudden when you put the two together, there was a dynamic that was off. And part of that was because of Koscielny's pure, just how raw he was to the partnership, to the league, to the style of play, and then having to pair that with Vermaelen. I think we're in a very similar situation. I think Gabriel can develop into one of – I think he's got the raw talent and ability to develop into a Koscielny-type player. He just needs to understand how the league works a little bit better. And I think we need to give him some time on that. I would – probably like to see Per come back in just to sort of settle things down, especially with Ospina in goal. And I do think it's – I don't think Mertesacker's played a match since the Barcelona match. I think he's been out since then, and I think that mistake was one that Wenger sort of saw as like, you can sort of continue to do this to us. Why? But I would like to see him come back in. Specifically because, well, we're not going to face the likes of a Messi, Suarez, Neymar in this league. And realistically, the best striker we're going to play is going to be the last game of the season against Aguero. So I would like to see Mertesacker come in because I do think, like you said, it's just that Gabriel is very raw. And we need to give him time. We shouldn't just sell him off. That's what everybody was saying, the exact same things about Koscielny right now, 3 to 4 years ago, they were saying about Gabriel. And we need to give the guy some time to truly adapt, understand how the league works, and be able to sort of refine and hone what he does back there. And I think he'll come good for us. We just need to be a little patient with him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. As I say, I'm not I'm not saying he's not going to come good. I think, harnessing the talent he's got. I mean, I like his aggression. I like the fact that he does look like a bit of a winner to me. He doesn't seem too bad in possession. I think that can be, again, developed. But John, the question I want to ask to you about the situation is, I'm not sitting here now and saying that Per Mertesacker is the future, because he's clearly not. He's an older player now. What I am going to ask you though is, would you be happy starting next season with the four defensive options we've got at centre back right now, Kos, Gabriel, Mertesacker and Chambers? Or do you think the time has come now where, and again, at the risk of opening that big box marked transfers, is this the summer where, rather than everybody banging on and on and on about the striker that we apparently so desperately need, is it that world-class, quote-unquote, centre-back that we should actually be prioritising this summer to arguably partner Koscielny?
Both. Sorry.
Greedy.
Well, greedy. Okay. Well, yeah, I want to win things, so okay, I'm going to be greedy. No, we do need a, I think, better centre half. I don't know. Mertesacker is a very good centre half. I just think he's one of those players that age has caught up with him quicker than certain others, because he's 30. What's he? 31, I think, per something like
Yeah,
that.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe he's older. I don't know. But some footballers age quicker than others in that sense. I think he's fine to have around as a squad player. If he's happy to do that. I think Gabriel has a lot to learn. I don't think there's necessarily. I think, like Jay said, he's got all the raw talents there. He's got pace. He's fairly decent. Yeah, he's pretty strong. His positional sense is where he gets caught out a lot. He's been turned too easily a few times this season, and it might just be a case that him and Koscielny just doesn't, as a partnership, work. Koscielny and Vermaelen, we all thought that was going to be amazing, and it didn't work out. So maybe he needs to find a player who will work with Koscielny or with Gabriel, or some sort of balance there. But yeah, I definitely would like to see a centre back come in the summer. Whether if that means that someone has to go, then probably it would be Mertesacker, just because of his age. Because you've still got Callum Chambers, who I think is a very good prospect. I think can develop into a really good player. I think there is a player in Gabriel. I just think you need to find someone right, and he needs more time. Koscielny is experienced enough. If you partner him with the right player, you saw when Per was playing well enough, they did have a good understanding that worked. And it is all about partnerships. There's plenty of players, centre backs in the Premier League, who I wouldn't take on their own, but if you took them with whoever it is they play next to, they're great. Like Gary Cahill is a centre back who I think he's okay. I don't think he's great, but when he's next to John Terry, those two together have been, fantastic. I know that, they weren't great at the start of the season or whatever for Chelsea, but more or less consistently, those two as a pair are great. Company has not found a partner since Lescott's left Man City. So you have to have. Gabriel can be sort of like the Martin Keown, if you like, of the team, the guy who has to come in when you need it for the games, and I don't think that's necessarily a problem. We do definitely need to find someone in the summer, but whether that's a priority, I don't know. There's a lot of spaces I think that needs to be filled in this team, but there is definitely an issue there in defence. I do think as well, having Cech in goal, that would make a does make a big difference. And again, it's not to knock Ospina. I think he's done really well when he's come in. He just doesn't. He's a good shot stopper, and I think he's got better at coming out for the ball from corners and things like that. But he doesn't organise in the way that Cech does. He doesn't have that presence behind the defence. And I think just as a defender, if you know, as much as I'm sure they trust Ospina, I think if you know you've got Cech behind you, it makes you feel a little bit more comfortable and relaxed, and then you can concentrate more on your own game.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And Cech is, he is of that slightly higher level. There's no disputing that. And the organisation thing comes in, and I agree with you. I think it is the partnership side of things. Excuse me. As for who's available and who's that, I mean, you could go on for hours, but they're I've said for a little while, there's a certain gentleman at Marseille who's available on a free transfer this summer. I would bite your hand off to have him. But before we delve into that, Jace, you just wanted to make a quick point about the goalkeeper's distribution, sort of difference of distribution.
And if you, I think a lot of it comes into how we defend and how we turn the ball over. If you look at Ospina, he does a lot of rollouts from the back. hitting, you know, Monreal, Koscielny, you know, Gabriel, Bellerin with the ball to feet, you know, deep into our half. And if you look at Czech almost never, ever rolls the ball out of the box. He almost always waits, will get upfield, and then he'll punt it deep. And I think what that's done is with Ospina, what we've seen in some of the games where we've conceded, is specifically because we're having to play the ball out from a deeper position on the field, we're giving the ball up in a deeper position on the field as well. The midfield's having to drop deeper to receive it. Therefore, we're inviting the pressure closer to our goal. And I think that's it's not necessarily a bad thing because there are tons of goalkeepers who roll the ball out on a consistent basis and don't have that issue. It's just the fact that there are times when we do get sloppy in possession like that and give the ball away in dangerous places that leads either to us having to foul somebody and then we concede off a free kick. Or you know, we give the ball up in our own defensive third and really puts our defense under a lot of pressure. So I really think that those two differences to me have been two of the biggest differences that I've seen. Is there are a lot of times when Czech was in goal and I would expect him to sort of do like a longer throw to hit somebody on a break, and he's not. He's held it, let us set up, and then punted the ball, as opposed to, like I said, Ospina just sort of and one, we all know Ospina doesn't have the leg strength that Czech has, which isn't necessarily a knock. He can still kick it about a mile further than I can, but he does tend to roll the ball out more. And I think that invites a lot more pressure on us and causes us to give the ball away in some more dangerous areas of the pitch.
That's a very fair point. And again, I think it's something that it's not always highlighted, but when you notice it, you really notice it, yeah. If that makes sense. So, yeah, good points. We are going to take a couple of questions before we leave you today. So please feel free to whack in the chat box any questions. Just before we take those, John will be looking after those. I just want to ask both of you just quickly, from an attacking standpoint, are you kind of happy with the way things are with Alexis Wright, you know, with Iwobi getting the starts, Welbeck up top? I just want to sort of get a very brief answer from you both. Start with you, John. Would you be looking to make any sort of changes to freshen that in the coming weeks, or would you like to see us stick with it until the end of the season now?
Someone's just asked, why is my beard so magnificent? I have no idea, Benny, but thank you very much for the compliment. I think I'd stick with it, to be honest. I know Welbeck probably his finishing is probably about as good as Giroud's, you know, like consistency-wise, maybe. But I think what he does in terms of stretching the defence and, you know, running the channels, running out wide to pull the defences about, is good. And I like having Giroud come off the bench as well, because, you know, the opposition team's a bit more tired. Then you have that physical presence you can play off. You know, it gives you another option as well to throw it into the box. And, you know, Iwobi at the moment has earned his place. I don't think today was his best game. He got 2 assists, which is great. I think defensively he was a little bit lack, and he maybe showed a little bit of immaturity, like when he got wound up by Mark Noble at one point during the game, and sort of, you know, nearly bit. He's earned his place in the team. I think there's the one player I feel sorry for is Joel Campbell, because as much as I don't rate him, I think he's done everything he possibly could this season to, you know, to earn his place, himself a spot in the team. I don't know why he wasn't on the bench today. I'm not sure if he's got a knock or something. You know, but he's, for me, he should be ahead of Walcott. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit unlucky for him that Iwobi's come through. He's obviously not in Arsenal's plans, and I think it's pretty obvious he's probably going to be sold in the summer. So he's the only other one who possibly would get a shout at some point. But, you know, I don't think you need to change it. Just, I know today is disappointing, and I'm really, really, really disappointed. But the front, you know, front sort of four, for the most part, have been really, really good.
Fair enough. And Jace, do you just sort of a quick answer for me? Anything that you would want to change in that forward line before we have the opportunity to not change it in the summer? Sorry, that was cheeky.
It's not just because he's a player that I've watched a lot, because he plays in CONCACAF, so he plays against the U.S. Men's National Team. all the time and does well. But, like, the guy had one average game and then does not come back. And how many times have we seen, and maybe it's the fact that Theo's part of the British core and Wenger seems really, really invested in forcing that to work. It really is baffling to me. Campbell had you know, not really put a foot wrong this season. Had some really good performances, even coming off the bench. In the last few games that he was able to come off the bench, added some dynamism and some directness that we didn't have previously in those games, and it caused opposition defenses trouble. And I don't know, but I love the kid. He's going to be probably one of those that I become a fan of wherever he goes, because he is exciting to watch. And while he may not be the best player that Arsenal's ever had, I do think he's exciting. And I do feel bad that when he's finally got his chance here after going out on loan for so many years that he took his chance, and for some reason everybody else saw it except for the one person who it really matters.
That's a very, very fair comment. And again, it will be a busy summer for many sides, so I'm sure we'll sit with our feet up and wait for the inevitable. Anywho, John, what have we got in way of questions?
Oh, you've got loads, mate, if you want to read them out, because I'm still looking through.
Oh, I see. Passing the buck. That's
yeah,
fine.
You're
okay.
You're asking the questions. I just thought
I'd give you some responsibility.
Here's what I want to do. I want to read the questions.
Okay.
Because a lot of these have to do with players that are not necessarily in the team right now, or how they affected in the transfer window. And Chris, you watch more European footy than I do, so I think you would be better prepared to answer these than I. So I will take your hosting hat and put it on currently.
Go on. Mark it in.
We're going to start with it's Arian Haidari. Sorry, I just dannied your name. What do you think of Florentin Pogba?
What do I think of him? I like him, but I presume we're talking about the... I presume we're not talking about... It's not a misprint, and we are talking about the St. Etienne brother of Paul. No, I like him. I don't think he's of the Arsenal sort of standard as of yet. And some people would say, "Oh, what is Arsenal standard?" Not very good, judging on today. But I think he's got a lot of potential. Obviously, he's a big strapping lad. He's very Kurt Zouma-ish, which I'm sure is what a lot of people will make the comparisons, because he's from St. Etienne. I would probably say that there are better options at his age that you could go after. I think of Laporte at Bilbao, and I think of name's gone. I'll have to come back to that. Somebody else I just thought of, but yeah, I think there are better options at a young age that you could go for. And the fact he's 25, I do think there are better players at that age. If he was like 19, 20, and you could bring him in as a future prospect, yes. But what's the lad at Leverkusen called, John? Who's that's the Badger, yeah. Somebody like that.
He's a fucking monster.
He is, and I think sadly we'll lose him to a side with a lot more money than we have. But yeah, I think at 25, probably not for me.
All right, John. Another question for you. Okay. What were you going to say, Chris? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, crack on with another one, sorry.
Oh, yeah. This is from our good friend Akshay, great friend of the show. Is what impact does Theo Walcott have coming on as an impact sub other than us losing a man in the build-up?
yeah, that's quite accurate, I suppose, for today. I know I bash Theo a lot, and he annoys the hell out of me. he got a goal in the last game, so I can't really complain too much.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, I can.
It's on 100 odd grand a week, Johnny. You can complain all you like.
I just don't understand how he hasn't improved. I don't know if it's we expected too much of him because he was so hyped up when he was young, but he doesn't. I suppose when he comes on, the other team will know, oh crap, there's a really fast player on the pitch. We have to drop a bit deeper. They have to be aware of that and him getting behind. And he still does make half decent runs when he can be bothered. But too many times he just does go missing or just doesn't show for the ball. Like today, he looked interested. The first thing he did was complain to Bellerin that he didn't play him in when he could have done when they were running in behind the fence. And I was like, good, you know, go and moan, you know, want the ball, do something. This is the Theo I want to see. You know, and he put a decent, like, low ball in at the front post that Giroud didn't get to. I think Winston re-cleared. But then you get the other side of it where he gets a really good chance to put a cross in and just puts in a high, loopy ball that Adrian comes and, you know, just grabs out the air and wastes the chance, gives possession away, and then doesn't track back. I think, honestly, that for me anyway, I think his time's done there. I wouldn't necessarily sell him straight away. I think if you get a good offer for him, then fine. But I don't think there's a you have to sell, but there's a definite you have to have a improvement for his position, like a player who is better than him in the squad. And I'd hope that you get that. I don't want to just sell him for the sake of it, because then you're down a player with nothing else coming. But if you can get someone in who's better, then yeah, fine. I have no problem with him going. And personally, I think I know Arsene may be a little bit reticent to do it because he's one of his, you know, little projects that he's had for the club for so long. But I think even Arsene is, to a certain extent, you know, getting fed up with it now, and maybe we'll let him go. So, you know, hopefully there's still idiots at Liverpool who will overrule Jurgen Klopp and make him sign Theo Walcott, because he's a big Liverpool fan, isn't he? So, you know, he can go out there and live with the bin dippers.
Good one. Another one, Jace.
Yes, this one for you, Chris. Our other good buddy, Liam. Liam, asks, is Elneny's emergence the perfect example of the nonsense that no player in the world could improve our squad?
It's a good question with a sting in the tail, because I know what he's trying to get at there. Listen, you can prove a point however you want to prove it. If you know, if you have a viewpoint, you can make that viewpoint stick. It's just like you can prove anything with stats. It doesn't always mean it's the truth. I think that what I do find funny about Elneny is that the same people that are saying we should be buying a quote-unquote world-class centre-forward are the same people that are saying, oh, Elneny, we got him cheap, but he's really good. And they're also the same people that said, oh, Elneny, he's shit, you know, I've never heard of him, he's not world-class. Well, sometimes you can look at it from both arguments, and I think that I think to say that nobody was available, even I would have trouble saying that there was nobody available. I know I've used that analogy at times on this show. I think it's a question of, were players available that were better than what we had at the time? And obviously the manager felt no. A lot of other people felt yes, and they're entitled to that opinion. Yeah, they probably were, John. You're probably right. But at the same time, you know, if, and it's a big if, but if we go out in the summer and buy in three or four players of a suitable level that we couldn't get last summer but that we can get this summer, then you'd probably say, okay, well, then it's kind of justified. At the same time, people will say, yes, but we didn't win the league this season, so it's not justified. So there isn't really a right or wrong answer to that question. It's a very good question, and it could be debated both ways. All I will say is that I would much rather us wait for the right player like an Elneny than go and spend 30-odd million on a Jeffrey Kondogbia, who will never be up to that level. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts. And also, let's not forget as well that however much you want to say it's not about the money, to a certain degree it is, because Arsenal are not a club that can afford to go and waste money on a player who might be all right. You know, we are a club that can afford to buy the right players, like an Ozil, like a Sanchez, that, let's be honest, there's only a 10% chance they're going to fail. We're not a club like Chelsea who can go and spunk God knows how much, many millions on a player that is just a shot in the dark. We can't do that. So, you know, there's an argument both ways. It's a good question, but there's no right or wrong answer, I don't think, anyway.
Living in the grey. What a smart man.
Oh, yeah. Sit on that fence.
So, all right, I have two quick one-word answer questions for both of you. John, go first on this one. Do you think we can still win the league?
No.
Chris?
Not anymore, not after today. No. Oh, well, no, we can't, no.
Oh, okay. And that was from Benny Erdogan.
Correct.
And then let's do this one as a yes or no. Should Arson never say goodbye, but eventually stay in a Godfather role, giving advice in a garden? Chris, take that one first. Yes or no? Should he give advice in the garden?
I don't know what in the garden. I think
gardening leaves, isn't it?
Oh, God. I think when Arson leaves, I think it would be better for all parties, both him and us, that he moves on completely. Because I think if he was in a role higher up in the boardroom, for example, I think people would still use that as an excuse. So I think for Arson's health and ours, it'd be better if he just moved on.
Great one word answer.
Sorry.
John, you next.
Away. Go away.
Get out of my garden.
Can I just quickly caveat that, Jason?
I don't trust him in the garden.
Can I just quickly caveat that, Jason? I know we've been asked by a lot of people today who our next manager would be and all that jazz, and I am not saying that I want Arsene Wenger to leave. So I just want to make that crystal clear now that until he chooses to move on, which I think personally will be the end of next season, yes. You know, that's what I will say. I'm not saying that he should go into the garden now.
So that leads us into the next question perfectly, Chris. It says, with the impact of Iwobi this season, do you think that we should promote more youth into the team? Because why should we spend the money in Wenger's last season? Shouldn't we hold on to it and give it to the next manager after next season?
With youth, Danny did an excellent part on this on the podcast this week, and all of the crew made some very good points on it, so it's well worth a listen. Cheap plug there. But for me, if the players are good enough, then yes, they should be given a chance. Absolutely, 100%. What I don't want is that to be used as an excuse to not sign certain players. You know, I've seen a lot of people saying about, you know, John Terrell, you know, he's doing brilliantly at Birmingham. He should be in our first team. Come on. You know, you have to be careful with this. Everybody raved about the Jeff pre-season. And don't get me wrong, we all love the Jeff. I was one of the few people that said, yeah, he's great. You know, he's explosive. He's exciting. But he's not anywhere near ready for the first team yet. Whereas Iwobi, I don't think anyone was really talking about him. He had a decent pre-season, in fairness, in that Emirates Cup as well. But he has quietly gone about his business, and he's come through at the right time. And when he's had the chance, he's really stepped up, much like Bellerin did. But what you can't do is say, right, okay, at the end of the season, we'll buy nobody, and we'll allow 10 youngsters to come through. What I'd like to see us do is bring through someone like a Zelalem, bring through someone like a Torrell, and bring through someone like a Christian Bielik, put them into the first team training from the youth team. But I'd like to see them learning, not straight into the starting lineup. I think the days of bringing in 16-year-old Cesc Fabregas are gone, sadly. And I think that we have to just temper what we expect from players. There is always one that will buck that trend. But I don't want to see us just flooding our first team with youngsters just because they're Arsenal players. You have to be a bit careful about how many you bring through at once.
John, this next next question, because we got to move on, because Danny's going to yell at us if we keep going too much longer. we all know we don't want that. Johnny Moon asks, is this the worst team under Wenger?
Wow.
No. The worst team under Wenger.
Danielson.
Yeah.
and all that lot. Danielson, Bentner.
Basically, I was going to say, like, Danielson, Squillaci, Bentner.
What year was that, like 2010?
Yeah, well, that was sort of, that was that.
The 8-2
era,
wasn't it?
That was 11. We had Cesc and Nasri in that, and that was great.
Yeah.
I know, as much as people hate them, but, you know, they were great players. But, yeah, we had, like, yeah, Danielson, and, like, and I remember reading about Danielson, and so, like, one of my mates telling me, like, he's like the under 19 Brazil captain, and he's going to be such a good player. And then like he played a few games, and I was like, it's all right. I don't really see the excitement. Then he's showing me all his stats. He's like, he's got the best pass completion rate in the league, and he completed blah 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 and all these other things. I'm like, doesn't do anything though. It just it's so boring. It just goes side to side.
Yeah.
He scored the wonder goal, and everyone's like, oh, it's an amazing Brazilian midfielder. We had this I don't know what it is at Arsenal. We've got this weird thing about buying the most boring Brazilians.
Are you saying Andre Santos was boring? Come on, John.
Gilberto, fucking love Gilberto, absolute legend. But he wasn't a flair skill player or anything like that, was it? You know, he is a bit of a boring player, but like very, very good footballer, amazing, amazing footballer. But it's a bit dull. But Danielson was just like, oh god. And then who's the other one? Baptista. Oh god, dear.
That is MLS's Julio Baptista.
Yes, I think he just signed for Orlando City.
He's
correct?
Playing alongside Kaká. There's a thought for you right now. Yeah.
I remember being genuinely excited about players.
Me too.
Last block was talking about it, like with Danny Carbassian from Friday. That's very good. If you haven't,
very good.
Yeah, go listen to. It's quite funny, but being genuinely excited about the youngsters coming through, like they talked about Arturo Lupoli and players like that. It's like, yeah, we're gonna have an Italian in the team at last. You know, this is gonna be they're dreadful. And I got completely suckered in by that whole thing, that whole project thing. I totally bought it for at least 2 years, and then afterwards, I what am I doing? How am I? Oh. Just never go back to that. Like cheering. Oh, who was the shitbag we bought from Man United as well? Silvestre.
Fucking hell. Yeah. Squillacci, those days were good.
Giroud and Senderos, you know, the Swiss chocolate. We had both colours.
Yeah. Havard Nordvijk we had, of course, who might end up at West Ham.
Now gone on to be quite good at Gladbach,
That whole
era. You know what was really annoying is like we had Cesc and we had Nasri, which was great. But we had like Andre Arshavin, who was like this really cool, exciting player. And we played him as a fucking winger. Why are you not playing as a number 10? I don't remember the horrible period when we didn't have a striker and Arshavin played as a striker against...
I remember that. Blackburn, wasn't it?
And he scored Stoke. Two goals.
Yeah,
he scored two goals up front against Stoke, this tiny little Russian bloke. It was bizarre. Weird period for the club.
I have to tell you quickly, John, into one, Mönchengladbach lost in the last minute to Ingolstadt. Oh, sorry about that. one I will say, and this is a little bit hipster here, but just talking about the Jeff, a lot of people said that that Jeff is going to be a star. Yacine Fortune is going to be, genuinely, I really think he's going to be fantastic. Really, really good. So keep an eye on him. As is Donyell Malen.
Is he the new Jeremy Aliadier?
No, no, not at all. No, I think he's going to end up in a sort of a wide forward role. At the moment, he's playing central midfield stroke number 10, but I think he'll end up as a wide forward. I really, really like what I see in him.
So much Henry Lansbury. That was
Henry Lansbury. Homegrown.
Really hated him.
Yeah.
Jace, two more, and then we're going to disappear.
Two more. All right, let's... What's this? Binny Ogden asks, do you think Iwobi was brought on too late in the season given Wenger's persistence with Walcott?
John, you can have that.
I honestly don't know because I don't know whether if Iwobi was ready at that point earlier in the season. I think the Walcott persistence to a certain degree was just a lack of other players. So maybe Iwobi could have come in sooner. He might not have been physically ready, or maybe they didn't think he was. It's really hard with young players because I don't see the reserve games or, you know, occasionally you get to watch an under-21 game if it's televised or on online. I'm trying to get to more actual matches because it's not that far for me to travel where they play. And it's actually affordable, cheap. It's nice, it's only a fiver a ticket. Maybe he wasn't ready at the time. It's always nice with hindsight. You go, oh, why didn't they bring this player in earlier? You just don't know. Same thing could have been said for Bellerin. They're like, I know he came in when he was, 18? Like, some people have said, oh, why didn't he come in earlier? You know, I've seen people call for Plegasuelu, the young kid that's been hyped for ever since he's been at Arsenal. You know, he hasn't appeared yet. So you can't really... So, oh God, Fran Marita, there's another one.
I had him on a shirt.
The names in the chat.
I've got a Fran Marita shirt, I'll have you know.
Oh dear. So yeah, so you can never tell what you know when they were going to be ready for the team. But I understand people's frustration with the whole the Walcott thing.
It was a bit
John
of
Campbell, the way Campbell's played this season. You thought Campbell get the time.
It was a bit of a, you know, I respect a lot of what Arsene Wenger does, but let's be perfectly honest, it was a little bit of a Hail Mary, wasn't it, throwing him in? Like, I think Arsene looked at stuff and went, you know what, I might as well, because we haven't really got much chance to lose.
Our best, the last two seasons, when we've had good periods, our best, like, 11s have been sort of stumbled across because of injuries and complete accident and just lack of any players.
Yeah.
Like,
Sammy
and Coquelin was shit with no one else. Let's get Coquelin back from Charlton, you know.
Yeah.
And then, like, Elneny and Coquelin was, we have absolutely no one else fit or available. Let's throw them in. Walcott's been dreadful. Ramsey's injured. For some reason, I hate Joel Campbell. It won't be. You know, that sometimes happens. It's a little bit worrying that over the last few years, that's happened more often. That screamed a little bit. Maybe some alarm bells should be going off there a little bit, maybe. But, you know, sometimes you get good luck.
Yeah. What we should say, of course, just briefly, and then, Jase, I'll let you have the last question. What we should say on that, though, is whatever you think, you know, priority and all that crap, you still got to be brave enough to put them in. You're essentially putting your reputation on the line to put them in, so fair play to put them in. Let's have one more question then, Jase.
Our last one from Everything Rude Rude Everything. Should Chris do his hair like Andy Carroll?
Absolutely.
I can answer that one.
Yes.
No.
Voting yes. Voting yes.
Honestly, I mean, I know the Geordies are quite flamboyant in their fashion sense and their trends,
but type one in the chat box if you're watching live if you want Chris to do his hair like Andy Carroll. Let's see if we can get a chat spat.
What would it take for you to do your hair like Andy Carroll? If Arsenal win the league this year, you have to do your hair like Andy Carroll.
Maybe an apocalypse.
Oh, we've got our first number one in the chat.
Yeah, there we go. That's
we got two. Daniel Cronin.
If we didn't get to your question, we apologize. But my bladder is about to explode.
Lovely. There's a thought, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, that's what happens when you have a few beers and water during the pod. But I think we got to everybody, and thank you guys for watching and for your questions, because that's why we do it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for your time and indeed your company today, boys and girls. We do really appreciate it, and that will be a goal for Crystal Palace, just in case you wondered, which makes me some money. Jolly good. Right, so that has been ABW Radio. Thank you to John. Thank you to Jason for joining me today. We appreciate it. And no robots for Jace. You've got to love that. Hey. We shall be back. Who's our next game? I don't know. Who we play next week? I don't know. We got Thursday game, haven't we?
Weird Thursday night.
West Brom. Yeah. So, oh, God, that'll be fun, John, because me and you are supposed to be doing another podcast that night.
Oh.
So me and John will be busy. Okay.
I forgot about that.
Well, we'll be back in some form or fashion on Thursday. Stay tuned. Do check out the podcast from Thursday night. Very, very good. An excellent, excellent little piece of ranting from Mr. Raj Patel. Fully justified, I might add, as well. So do listen to that. And, of course, check out the Bergy blogs. Mr. Holofrand, nod to Jeff, does a fantastic job. The latest blog from Simon Collings about the future of the youth players, ironically, is well worth a read. So do check that out. That's it from us, then. We'll speak to you very, very soon. That has been ABW Radio. If you like what you see, give us a little thumbs up and a little review down below, so to speak. Hey, giggity. We'll speak to you very soon. Thank you for your time. Keep it Arsenal. See you later.
Give it away.